jams.
You're my dream come true, and all that jazz. Baby, you're too much. You got the skin I love to touch. The skin I love to touch too much. And all that jazz. You have got the lips that suit my taste, and your fingertips can't be replaced. Oh, baby, what you got, nobody has. And I got you and all that jazz. Shadwee, dwee, doo, 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 boo, boo.
And all that jazz.
Wee, dwee, dwee, doo, 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 doo.
And all that jazz.
Baby, you're too much. You got the skin that I love to touch. The skin I love to touch too much.
And all that jazz.
Yeah, all that
jazz.
You have got the lips.
And all that jazz.
She's not really too hip.
And all that jazz.
Oh, baby, what you got, nobody has. I got you and all that jazz. Here we go. I'm in love with you, pretty baby, and all that jazz. You are my dream come true, and all that jazz. Baby, you are really too much. You've got the skin that I love to touch. The skin I love to touch too much. And all that
and
jazz.
All that jazz. Oh, yeah.
Mel Torme. That's a phenomenal piece of music. It's actually a, quite a phenomenal video. It came from a film that Sammy Davis Jr. had done back in the 60s. I was in the military at that time, stationed in Germany. Movie just blew me away. Sammy Davis Jr. was an astounding entertainer, as Mel Torme was. The film was called A Man Called Adam. And in the film, Sammy Davis Jr. played a trumpet player. And yeah, I saw that video for years, and this piece we just played tonight is actually from the video, which can be found on YouTube. Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's program, To Health With You. Given the things we just shared with you, Rockefeller involvement and some of the other things, some of the symptoms, there is another piece that I published many, many years ago, which had been written by Mary Starrett. In 2003, she'd been on television for 3 decades, a news anchor, morning talk show host, medical reporter. And during the turn of the millennium, she'd hosted a radio program. But telling the truth cost her broadcasting career. So she began to write instead of talking. This particular piece I published on the first generation of the Federal Observer, once again, on September 1 of 2003, we'd also published it on Dr. Kelly's site once in August of 2013. It was updated in 2018. I believe I've republished it now, and I'm going to share this with you. It's a short piece called Develop a Natural Cancer Treatment and Go to Jail. You see, there's two major reasons we don't have a cure for cancer, despite a 55-year-old war on the disease. Survival rates haven't increased one damn bit. The governmental meddling of the National Institutes of Health, the National Cancer Institute, along with the FDA, have made it difficult, if not impossible, for doctors with breakthrough cancer therapies, like Dr. Kelly, to bring their healing discoveries to those who need them. The orthodox medical establishment is hell-bent on destroying anyone who dares to challenge the status quo on cancer treatment. Well, even though we've lost the war on cancer, we continue to use and promote the very methods that don't work while banishing those who try non-pharmaceutical modalities to the scrap heap of healing. The New England Journal of Medicine reported that women who had their entire breast removed, the radical mastectomy, didn't live longer than those who opted for the less invasive lumpectomy. Men who had their prostate gland removed after a diagnosis of cancer lived just as long as those who didn't. Either way, the men lived about 14 years after diagnosis. And finally, chemotherapy helped only 2% of cancer patients. And that, my friends, has not changed. Keep in mind, as I share with you, what I'm sharing with you was published back in 2003. Nothing has changed. You see, infection is the most frequent cause of death in cancer patients. Those infections are likely to have been picked up in a hospital. And these grim stats are out there, but they're not being shared with patients. In fact, those with a cancer diagnosis continue to be encouraged to do the very things that will sicken, maim, and eventually kill them. And all the while, naturally derived compounds and extremely effective treatments do exist. Patients won't find out about these treatments from their doctors, however. Doctor, D-O-C-H-T-A-H-S, doctors. And with heartbreaking regularity, some very effective treatments are being kept from desperate patients because of politics. Former New York State Assemblyman Daniel Haley wrote a book about it entitled Politics in Healing. And Haley outlined 10 cases of brilliant medical researchers who risked their freedom and their fortunes to share their discoveries with terminal patients. And one such story involves Stanislaw Brzezinski. Had a medical degree and a PhD in biochemistry. Brzezinski left Poland and came to America with a phenomenal therapy for treating cancer. And he helped countless patients through a treatment that inhibited cancer cell growth called... this is a strange word. Actinioblastomes. Long explanation short, those cells reprogram cancer cells, inhibit their growth. And for his pioneering and enormously successful work, the FDA tried to put him in jail. He was put out on probation. He was messed with by the NCI, that's the National Cancer Institute, a government agency, by the way, despite the fact that he had verified track record when it came to difficult brain tumor cases. Parents of children with conditions like medulloblastoma, which is a brain tumor, and I'm sure I mispronounced the word, have had to petition the FDA requesting compassionate exemption for children who would otherwise have died without the treatment of Brzezinski. Little Thomas Navarro suffered from this type of brain tumor, and the prognosis wasn't good. What the FDA recommended, chemotherapy, would have most likely left Thomas's brain damaged, retarded, and deaf. He would have lived maybe another 5 years. The boy's parents battled for something better, and they struggled to point out that the chemo the FDA pushed for Thomas was carcinogenic, toxic, unproven, and ineffective. According to the parents of another little boy named Alex Horwin, who was similarly not allowed by the FDA Gestapo to seek another treatment. And Alex died in his parents' arms. Remember, chemotherapy helped only 2% of cancer patients. Keep that in mind. It must tear at the parents' hearts to know that the vilified Dr. Brzezinski has successfully treated, at the time of this writing, 7 children with the same tumors. Of those, 6 were still alive at the time of this column. The tumors either completely gone or stabilized. What's oops? Oh, we should have reconnected. Let me place this. We're going to go. Let's cut this.
Yeah, let's do it. We got to disconnect and reconnect. We've got a sound issue going on. It's got to be from my end. Be right back. Stay with us.
So sorry for that. I had to have a dance with Kim, and we have an occasional sound issue, and I believe that I am the only host at the network that continues to have this problem. And we forgot. We always disconnect at the end of the first hour, reconnect. We forgot to do it today, so apology for the sound issues. We kind of left off talking about this situation about parents getting their hearts torn out to know that the vilified Dr. Brzezinski has successfully treated a number of children with the same tumors. Of those seven, six were still alive at the time of this writing. Tumors were either completely gone or stabilized because the children brought to him who had chemo or radiation had all died. Think about that. Antineoplaston's work when the FDA stays out of it and does not require people taking the treatment to have chemo or radiation first. This medical doctor who came here from Poland must have wondered why in America people weren't free to choose what type of medical care they want, or why he was made to face the inquisition of governmental agencies trying for years to jail him. Isn't that why he left Poland? Chantal Hiron was chosen to carry the Olympic torch during the Games in Sydney in the year 2000. 7 years before that, she was given 3 months to live after discovery of a brain tumor. 7 years! Chantel's Australian town raised money to send her to Dr. Brzezinski's clinic in Houston, Texas. And as soon as the antineoplastins were started, the tumor shrank and ultimately disappeared. Running alongside Chantel that day was Brzezinski, the man who had saved her life, the man that America's FDA had tried to put in jail. And that's just one more example. Now I'm going to take you to another example. Something else, by the way, that I had published on November the 23rd of the year 2000. Now, keep in mind, by the year 2000, I had been working very closely with Dr. Kelly for about a year and a half. He had originally been a guest on my program. I have the recordings of those programs. And at some point in time, I'm going to get them converted. They're on tape. Because that's how I recorded these programs so many years ago. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I was doing something different. I have to go in and listen to them. And I'm going to get them transcribed, and we're going to see about trying to air those. I want you to hear Kelly's voice and how we address things. I am going to share a story with you tonight called The Scott Sterling Story. And this is from a letter from Scott's brother. And when I originally published it, I wrote a foreword that starts out by saying, we thought you might be interested in reading, or in this case, listening to the words of the brother of one of Dr. Kelly's cancer counselees, circa 1997, 2 years before I met Kelly. At the time of this publishing, the survivor was still with us. And what I'm about to share with you is from Dr. Kelly's book. And as the, at that point in time, the 24 years that we've maintained the website for the works of Dr. Kelly and others, as relates to cancer and other health-related issues. There are times that we feel it's worthwhile to republish, or should we say bring back to the forefront, older articles, older commentaries. And this may, in fact, be the first time that we've chosen to bring this back to the top. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you learn from it. I hope to soon be sharing the encouraging words of many friends of Dr. Kelly's. Stay tuned, my friends. The life you save could be your own. Because that which you are about to listen to in my voice may change your life forever. And keep in mind, these are the words written by Greg Sterling out of Vancouver, British Columbia, March 1997. He begins by saying, when I was 11 years old, my brother Scott was diagnosed with terminal cancer. He was 20 at the time. Now, his story was unique because he was one of the 150,000 individuals lucky enough to find Dr. William Donald Kelly's book, which at the time was called One Answer to Cancer. And Scott was one of the only 33,000 to actually go on the program at that time. At the time of this writing, he was healthy, cancer-free, living in California with his wife and three children. And Scott's experience changed the lives of each member of their families. For me, our author continues, the effect appeared when I was older. Around the age of 19, I began to experiment with various diets. I would cross-reference my overall sense of energy and my performances in running 10 kilometers to the diets I used, always allowing at least 90 days between any changes. What I found should come as no surprise to anyone. When I consumed a largely uncooked vegetarian diet, eliminated alcohol consumption, drank plenty of fresh squeezed juices, my 10K running times and subsequent recovery periods were shorter than when I used a diet of more meat and cooked foods. In other words, my body worked better on simple fuels from nature. For the greatest majority of us, we are born in perfect health. Our health and aging process after birth is largely influenced by genetics, culture, geography, and, of course, the foods and liquids we consume. These things are all that distinguish who will grow to be strong and who will grow weak. Why is it some people can live lives of smoking and poor diet and live to be 90? And others are susceptible to ill health and disease while living a relatively healthy lifestyle. The fact is, my friends, that regardless of outward physical appearance, some people will become cancer victims, and some apparently likely candidates won't. It is simply human nature, and that some bodies are innately stronger and more resistant to others, or resistant than others are. As adult individuals, we have only one variable which is in our total control, and that is our diet. The difference in lifestyle that you have led in your ancestry three generations removed is remarkable. We live in a world where air pollution is a daily occurrence. We work in jobs that are demanding in time, tolerance, and ability to change and adapt. We struggle to balance our career, our family, our spiritual, emotional, and social lives. And yet, as a society, we have largely failed to intelligently consider the fuel which runs this remarkable human body. Fuels that provide peak performance, keep our internal operating systems running properly. When we're young, we feel invincible. Immortal. Some of us develop habits and patterns in early adult life that prove detrimental later on. We eat too much dead food, drink too much alcohol, smoke cigarettes, take prescription drugs for any little perceived ill, all the while wrongly trusting that the regulatory bodies of society will look out for our health. Let me tell you, in the words of a great songwriter, I read the news today. Oh, boy. Against the advice of leading doctors and scientists across the country, FDA Commissioner Dr. Kessler approved the fat substitute Olestra for public consumption. Doctors across the country, from Johns Hopkins to Harvard Medical, warned against the possible fallout from introducing this synthetic fat into the American diet for reasons which we've been well published in the media. Interestingly, most of the warning comes from the academic side of the medical science community. Why do you suppose that is? We're going to tell you, my friends. It has been believed for a long time that the American medical complex and the consumer food and beverage industrial complex have little interest in the prevention of disease. Oh, no. It makes far better business sense to let the population eat, drink, smoke to their heart's content, and be merry, and then offer seemingly high-tech and expensive methods for cleaning up the aftermath. In the United States, the food industry alone generates $500 billion in sales of bacon, eggs, and milk, and fast food franchises, and soft drinks, and fried food, and dead food, and overcooked food. Well, let's not forget sweets and treats and canned goods. Oh, no, we've gotten away from simple diets. We've become human garbage disposals. 60% of the American public is overweight. And clearly the large food conglomerates are successfully marketing to an oblivious public. Because after feeding your body with dead and processed foods for 20, 30, 40 or more years, then things begin to run less perfectly. And we've overlooked the processing energy required to digest bacon and eggs each morning, that steak in the evening and the cocktails in between. The result is the current health crisis, when 1 in 3 will have cancer in their lifetimes, not to mention heart disease. It's interesting. I read this, I share this with you, and I sit there looking at some of this stuff. Brings up the steak. I don't think I have 2 steaks a year, if that. I'm not into it. I don't care for the nonsense that my wife buys as far as the so-called pork chops. They're horrible. The one she's buying is just absolutely terrible. And then God knows what the heck she soaks it in before she decides to destroy it by pretending like she's cooking it. No, I think I'd rather just sit down and have some spaghetti and noodles, believe it or not. But keep in mind, instead of educating the public on how our bodies function best, our medical establishment chooses instead to clean out our arteries with drugs and catheters, perform bypass surgery, or cut the problem out or off altogether. To be fair, the American medical community has done some wonderful things, and they've made outstanding progress in the last 50, 60, 70-odd years, but it's simply not in their best interest to prevent disease. We're in the business of treating disease. That's where the money is. Surgery, MRIs, radiation, chemotherapy. Let's not forget the research and the examinations. Doctors don't want a disease-free society any more than lawyers want a perfectly honest one. And so, one of the things that we here have done for many years now, since 1999, when I began working with Dr. Kelly, at that time he was publishing a book called One Answer to Cancer. That's what drew me into this thing. I've shared this story with you many, many times. Kelly I was introduced to him by Adam Locke at WWCR, where I first began broadcasting back in 1995. And it wasn't until 96 I was on my own. I had my own shortwave program. And Adam Locke and I became very good friends. By 1999, I had a very profound program, a very well-liked program, a very popular program, doing very much the same kind of things that I still do. Some of the programs that I re-air are out of my archives going all the way back to those years. Late 90s, early 2000s. And one day Adam Locke called me and said, look, I've got a guy who wants to be a guest on your program. I said, Adam, you know I don't do guests. And I had done some for some people and realized that they wanted to use me to line their pockets. And I just said, I don't need this. And he said, no, I think you need to talk to this guy. He shared with me why and what it was about. He said, you know, he was a guest on one of your buddies' programs. And it was an abysmal failure because the other host that I knew, and that he and I were very good friends for a lot of years, drove out and spent some time with him in New Mexico where he lived, et cetera, et cetera. And he and I got together and we did a series of programs together. And I'm not even sure he's still alive. He seems to have disappeared. A lot of people have asked me about him. He wound up with some major health issues, and he and his wife fell apart, and his kids wouldn't have anything to do with him. It was just terrible. But he said, the guy heard your program. And he said, I think you need to talk to him. I said, okay. He gave me his number. I called the man up. It was Dr. William Donald Kelly. And we talked for a bit. Share with me a little bit about experience with his broadcasting with the other host. He had sent the host a copy of his book, and he became a guest on my buddy's program. The problem was is that every time that the host would ask Dr. Kelly a question, the host had read the book, and he was a know-it-all. And so he began to answer his own question, and Kelly just sat there going, blah, 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 what am I here for, you know? So Kelly sends me a copy of his book, One Answer to Cancer. And what he said to me is, I'd like to send you a copy of my book. And I'd like to invite you to read it. And if you're interested, give me a call and we'll set something up. I said, I'd love to see the book. Now, the book was in the middle of a reprint, and it took about 3 weeks for the book to show up. And I got it in the mail one day, finished my nightly program. And I sat down and began to read the book. I was so fascinated. I was drawn into this thing. I read the entire book. I stayed up all night. I read the entire book. And I put it down. I did not make a call the next day. A couple of days later, I read the entire book again. And I was ready. Kelly became a guest on my program in January of, I believe it was 1999. I've never stopped doing the work and making myself available, William Donald Kelly. I'm not a doctor, nor will I attempt to be. But the book at that time was called One Answer to Cancer. Many years later, after Kelly passed away, there was a second version of the book that had been taken over by doing some work with Kelly on it, but he began to alter the book, and it was just there were things that were really screwed up in it. And I can't remember who it was. We were instructed to stop selling the book legally because of its title. The book was entitled Cancer, Curing the Incurable. Well, you can't talk about curing cancer. That was the key. The words, curing the incurable. Okay? I was approached by John Kelly, Dr. Kelly's son. This, of course, Kelly was deceased by that time, and asked if I would take over publication of Kelly's books. The first one we did was the self-test for the different metabolic type. The only alteration I made inside that book was a particular image that needed updating. And there was a separate pamphlet that had been pub is strictly for medical professionals, for doctors. And Kelly would have them published separately. Well, that costs more money to do, and yet he asked me to send copies of that pamphlet out to every copy of the self-test book that people purchased. And I decided with the republication to insert the pamphlet, the little extra 30-page stuff, into the self-test book. And we did exceptionally well with it. And then we, of course, had to make some conversion to the cancer book. John said, what are we going to do? We can't use that title anymore. That cancer cure and the incurably. So what are you going to title the book? It took me less than 5 seconds to tell him we're going to call it Victory Over Cancer Without Surgery, Chemotherapy, and Radiation. The term Victory Over Cancer was used by both Kelly and Dr. Nick Gonzalez as he spoke of the word. Remember, Gonzalez had done a lot of research into Kelly's work with patients, and it was phenomenal. So the book that we have, Victory Over Cancer, Without Surgery, Chemotherapy, and Radiation, is, of course, intended to provide an alternative view to conventional medicine in regard to 20th century disease, to profess prevention in healthy people, to educate those who are ill. Keep in mind, the human body is the most incredible of discoveries. Perhaps it receives so little consideration because we all get one upon entering this life. We take it for granted until it cries out to us. We invite people to certainly read the book, incorporate everything in it that can into our lifestyle. Listen to our heart, the voice within us. Seek the advice of a trusted physician. And on that note, a word of caution. Doctors who held Dr. Kelly in high esteem and those who saw him as a threat, and might submit to you, want to be prepared to encounter one or the other. The open-minded ones tend to be the former. Now, I've extended the story out that I'm sharing with you. These are the words written by Greg Sterling, the man in Vancouver, British Columbia, whose brother has survived because of the work of Kelly. He concludes by saying, finally, Kelly was aggressively persecuted and oppressed during his years of treating cancer patients. I don't generally call them patients. I call them cancer victims, my friends. So I just want you to be aware of that. Greg continues by saying his success was unparalleled in conventional medicine. Personally, both my brother and my chiropractor went to Kelly. Both were resolved of their disease. And yet Kelly had been forbidden to advise cancer victims, and his books must carry with it a warning to all. It's not intended to be a cure. It's designed to be a program to be used in conjunction with the guidance of your own physician for the resolution of degenerative disease. And as the writer of this preface, I can say that the truth of Dr. Kelly's paradigm is both preventive and healing. And he concluded by saying, I wish you Godspeed in the hope that the truth will set you free. Now, understand what I've just shared with you was included in Kelly's book, One Answer to Cancer. I would not remove it to save my soul. It remains in Dr. Kelly's book, Victory Over Cancer, Without Surgery, Chemotherapy, and Radiation. There is a interesting poem that I don't know if it's something Greg Sterling did or if I added it, because it was profound. It says, few will listen. Of the few who listen, fewer still will understand. Understanding does not mean believe. Of the handful who believe, most may not know what to do. Those who even know, how many will actually do? And the rare ones who have done it need not listen to you anymore. I've on so many occasions shared this brief story with you, that while I was in the process of doing the renovation of my son's home back in 2015, that's when the process began to overhaul Dr. Kelly's cancer book, to restore it, number one. I was one of the few people that actually had a complete taped copy of the book that I could insert in my computer and get back to work on it. That's the kind of relationship Kelly and I had for quite a while, but Kelly had his ups and downs with getting along with people, but I never stopped. So while I was preparing and working on this book, many of our listeners know, my older listeners know, that I'm not talking age, people who listened to my program years ago, etc., knew that I had this project going on, and I was spending all these hours working on this stuff. So in sometime in 2015 and whatever it was, I've lost track. I think I started the work actually in 2014. It was. I started the work in 2014, I believe, and eventually sold the house. I moved out of it in, I think, May the 15th of 2015. I still see the people that bought the house, and it's an amazing place to go visit. And those of you who've been with me for any number of years know how much I love that home, and wished I'd bought it and stayed there. It was peace for me. But one of the things I said to the audience is that, letting people know that we have the upgraded book, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I would not accept a credit card as payment. I would not do any kind of PayPal stuff. I would only accept an order for the book with an advance check. Got to mail me your check. You want the book? I got to have your check. But the promise that I would not cash the check until the day the book went to the printer. And I did not violate that. And it was sometime later that I came across a letter. I was a stupid fool. I'm sitting there stamping all these checks, getting ready for this freaking amazing deposit. It was all checks and money orders to get these darn books going. It took me a week to get these darn things ready to go. And the deposit, that's how many we had. And, of course, I'm taking the envelopes, I'm putting all this stuff aside, I'm, get mailing addresses all put together, the whole nine yards, labels for the books. And apparently destroyed some letters. I came across a part of a letter that I had not destroyed, written by Linda H. Now, keep in mind, this was 2015 that I got this letter. I was at my son's. Okay? The letter says, I had the privilege of going to Dr. Kelly in 1975 in Grapevine, Texas for the treatment. Here I am in 2015 at the age of 69. He was a wonderful, caring man, and I credit him with the long life I have had. I am so blessed to have found him and his wisdom, and I will always be grateful. Signed, Linda H. My friends, that tells you a lot. Now, there's one more thing that I want to add to all of this, and I do not know if they are still available, if they're still online. I have three YouTube videos that were done by Greg Sterling giving a lecture about his brother's work with Dr. Kelly. Now, some of what I've just read with you tonight, written by Sterling, are going to be a part of those videos. I cannot trust YouTube. YouTube is doing all they can to prevent any commentary regarding alternative health. Doesn't matter if it's successful or not. Understand what you stupid, dumb, ignoramus people are doing. And stop. I've got videos that have now been canceled. I can't restore them. One exception. If you go to drkelly.net and the little search bar over on the right-hand side, right below the banner that says Victory Over Cancer Can Be Achieved, there's a little search bar. Just type in the name Gonzalez. Any article that I've done that deals with Nick Gonzalez, I've published a lot of his written work. If there happens to be a video in it, some of the videos are active. Some of them are no longer active. If you happen to come across any of them that are now dead, you know, video no longer available, et cetera, I would appreciate you sending me an email letting me know the title of the article that you were reading, that you were hoping to see a video on. Let me know so that I can go in. If it happens to be one of Nick Gonzalez's videos, I can still get them from the foundation, from the Gonzalez Foundation. There was not a lecture that Gonzalez ever gave that he did not discuss Kelly at length. Keep in mind, it was June of, 2 years ago? That we did a four-part series based upon an intense speech that Nick Gonzalez had given, that his widow had just discovered months before I got this thing. She found an old laptop of his that had this entire presentation that Gonzalez had done, and they printed the written words of it, and she sent me a copy. They did it in 7 segments. Well, I took the entire lecture and converted it into a 4-hour presentation on my program right here at RBN in June and July of 2002. We have re-aired it several times. I may consider re-airing it again because it's that profound. Here's the interesting factor of it. The entire lecture was in discussion of William Donald Kelly and how he had developed the entire metabolic typing program and what it had done for people. These are the things you need to do. Certainly, you could go on RBN's archives. You want to get to the archives? Go back and pull up Jeffrey Bennett. You go back to June and July of 2002, you'll find all 4. Well, what was that? Was I doing a 1-hour program back then? Yeah, I was. So it'll be 4 Wednesdays in a row. Uh-huh. Need some other information, feel free to send me an email. You can reach me at Victory, V-I-C-T-O-R-Y, at drkelly.net. Dr. Kelly is drkelly.net. There is no period after the DR. Victory at drkelly.net. Comments, questions? If you happen to have an interest in acquiring Dr. Kelly's books, not a bad thing to do. Let's spend the last few minutes going in a different direction. This has been a very interesting 2 hours for me tonight. Don't know if I got enough time to finish sharing this last piece, but I find it an interesting one. It's a piece I came across very recently. I was quite profoundly ecstatic with it. Written by a doctor of whatever DO stands for. Recently, just days old. Talks about a survivor's story after years of growing clues He says how he knew that he had pancreatic cancer. As we know, pancreatic cancer diagnosis can be startling. And yet this young survivor who battled the disease during the COVID-19 pandemic shared how he overcame the odds. And his prime comment was that every day was a gift. Pancreatic cancer, representing 3% of all cancer cases and 7% of cancer-related deaths in this country, the U.S., is a serious health concern. Of course, that's all been highlighted by the American Cancer Society. 2024, it's projected that nearly 66,440 Americans will be diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and a tragic estimate of 51,000 of them will succumb to the disease in that same time frame. Wait, 66,440 will be diagnosed, and out of that, 51,750 individuals will die? Look, tucked away behind the stomach, the pancreas might be small, but its role in our body is critical. It aids in food digestion through enzyme production and regulates blood sugar levels with insulin. And yet its discrete location often means that this cancer remains asymptomatic until advanced stages, making vigilance and regular medical checkups essential, as with all cancers. Better to catch it early. The words from Dr. Nadine Mikhail says that a small lesion of the pancreas without invasion of the surrounding blood vessels and lymph nodes or other organs is stage one. Be alert to the symptoms and the signs. Seek medical attention early, she says. Here's some of the key pancreatic cancer symptoms that we need to watch for. Upper abdominal pain that radiates to the back. Nausea. Decreased appetite, rapid weight loss, yellowing of the skin and the eyes, dark urine, abdominal swelling, changes in bowel movements. For individuals with a higher risk due to genetic predispositions or a family history of pancreatic cancer, Dr. McKeel points out that screenings such as endoscopic ultrasound and MRI, magnetic resonance, this is a weird word. I just call it MRCP. It's the shortened version. They all should begin at age 50, she says, or a decades earlier than the first diagnosis in a family member. Lifestyle factors such as tobacco and alcohol consumption, high calorie diets, chronic pancreatitis, and diabetes also play a role in the disease's incidence. And amid these statistics and warnings, we share the inspiring journey of Brian, a 28-year-old from the Denver metro area whose life was irrevocably altered by a pancreatic cancer diagnosis. But his story is not just one of resilience and strength, but a reminder of the importance of heeding the early warnings of this insidious disease. How did Brian know he had pancreatic cancer? The doctors thought it was everything but cancer. But for years, he battled with severe abdominal pain and persistent vomiting episodes. And during his college years, even moderate drinking resulted in hours of sickness the following day, a reaction that puzzled him since he wasn't a big drinker. The pain became so debilitating at one time that he found himself hospitalized. The diagnosis? Peptic ulcers. That was attributed to the stress. The prescribed pain medication offered temporary relief, but it was merely a Band-Aid solution to a problem that was far more complex than he or his doctors realized at the time. And so in the year 2019, when he was 23, the all-too-familiar symptoms resurfaced with a vengeance. Faced with the grim realities of inadequate health insurance, he endured the suffering in silence. And the cost of care was a barrier too great to cross, leading him to dismiss urgent pleas from those around him to seek help. Don't take me to the ER unless you find me unconscious. That's what he would say half jokingly, and yet fully aware of the financial burden such a visit would impose. That cycle of pain and reluctance continued until his mother insisted he get checked out. And what followed was a relentless 6 to 7 week pursuit of answers through a maze of medical tests and procedures and blood work and CT scans, MRIs, and more, all painted a picture that confused even seasoned medical professionals. It confused seasoned medical professionals, people. But a mass on his pancreas hinted at a possible cause. However, the notion of cancer, particularly his age, was dismissed outright. It must be a cyst, they said. It wasn't until a biopsy was conducted in April of 2020, when he was 24, that the true nature of his condition was revealed. And that's how he knew he had pancreatic cancer. Specifically, acinar cell carcinoma, a rare form of pancreatic cancer affecting fewer than 1,000 individuals worldwide each year. And that revelation brought him a mix of shock and profound fear, and yet it also provided a sense of relief. Because for the first time in years, there was a clear enemy and a plan of attack. And he remembered thinking, okay, I know what my next steps are. I know how we're moving forward with this. And then he began the pancreatic cancer treatment during the COVID-19 global plandemic. But after he knew he had pancreatic cancer, he underwent an aggressive trio of chemotherapy and surgery and radiation. The intensity of the chemo also included a continuous infusion pump hooked to his chest, slowly administering a potent drug known as F-fluoraciol, better known as 5-FU. That's got its own connotations, doesn't it? Oh, he had that for 2 or 3 days at a time. And I remember making a lighthearted comment to his oncology nurse about the name, saying, that's a lot of FUs, which in a way summed up his feelings toward the entire ordeal. The side effects were harsh. Severe sensitivity to cold, making even a sip of cold water painful, along with relentless nausea that led to daily bouts of vomiting. Surgery followed the initial chemo procedure that claimed his entire pancreas, gallbladder, spleen, 45 lymph nodes that had gone from his belly button up to his throat. And then on top of that, the COVID-19 pandemic added a layer of isolation to the whole situation, restricting the support that he could receive. Had to do his chemo treatments leading up to his surgery alone, but thanks to his surgeon's understanding, his parents were able to be with him after the surgery. Well, he continued to fight after he knew he had pancreatic cancer. Emerged from the surgery, not only physically diminished, but also facing a new reality as a brittle diabetic, a condition characterized by a complete lack of blood sugar regulation because of the removal of his pancreas. He wasn't just suffering from no insulin production like a type 1 diabetic. He was dealing with no blood sugar regulation whatsoever. And the aftermath of surgery, plus an additional couple of months of chemo, introduced him to a cycle of nausea and blood sugar crashes and gastroparesis, significant weight loss. He dropped to 94 pounds. But he continued to fight, fueled by the unwavering love and support from the people around him. And the final stage of his treatment unfolded with 3 months of radiation in early 2021, marking the end of his scheduled therapy and the beginning of a new challenge. Piecing together his life in the aftermath of a tumultuous fight with pancreatic cancer. Well, he ultimately wound up with a special companion on the road to recovery. Yeah, a little furry friend. Pets can do wonders for the human health, you know. And that dog became a source of comfort and motivation that was deemed medically necessary. Well, there's more to the story, my friends, but time is not going to allow us to share it with you. I want to invite you to go to drkelly.net and start going through the programs that we have there. Not the programs from the live broadcast, et cetera, okay? I generally don't do that, and I may regret that. I may find that taking these programs, such as what we're doing today, and making copies of them and putting them up there in a broadcast field just where we're talking about this stuff, But take a look at this. Finish reading the rest of this story. It's called One Survivor's Story After Years of Growing Clues. Here's how I knew I had pancreatic cancer. Pretty much everything else we've shared on the air with you today has been published. There's a lot of other things to take a look at. Foods contaminated with toxic substances cause more than 13,000 cancer cases a year in this country. We've got trouble. We've got big, big trouble. Well, we're going to do as we normally do. We're going to close out with Ella. Jeff Bennett, I thank you for being with me for this solid 2 hours tonight. As we always do each Wednesday, with glass lifted on high, I say to health with you. God bless and good night.
When they begin the to live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart, and there we are swearing to love forever and promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So begin the beginning. Oh yes, let them begin the beginning. Make them play till the stars that were there before return above you, till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you. And we suddenly heaven we're in when they begin the beginning, when they begin the beginning.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.